spiritual illumination and experience in absolute. We're all interested in moving in that direction, in absolute. And spiritual illumination is an experience in absolute. This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing here in Capel, California, with our absolute philosopher. Spiritual illumination and experience in absolute. I've had many people who have had spiritual illumination, and most of the time, in fact, I'd say the majority of the time, when people have spiritual illumination, they don't know about it. They're in a hypnotic trance, and they have no understanding of what is happening to them. And because of that, there's no benefit. There's no benefit to them. It's as though they had eaten the candy bar and they had no taste. You know, what difference would it make if they ate a potato or a candy bar? If you have no taste, it really doesn't do much difference. And so, spiritual illumination, when it is under that aegis, it is primarily from the point of view that nobody knows what's going on. Now, the Buddha, he had his spiritual illumination, as we are told about it, and he didn't remember anything about it. He didn't have any idea what had taken place. He merely realized that he was walking the wrong direction on his spiritual path, for him. Now, there are many people who are walking the path that he walked, who do not think they're walking the wrong path. And they're walking the path of a mendicant monk. They're walking the path of having nothing, owning nothing, being nothing, just being naked through life, with no food, no clothing, no house, no family, no nothing. Just totally walking through life, listening for their inner voice. And I would say the majority, if not all of them, well, let's say 99% of the mendicant monks do not achieve their goal. Now, why is it that the mendicant monks do not achieve their goal? Why is it a person seeking spiritual illumination does not achieve spiritual illumination?
Because their seeking is their possession.
They do not accomplish these goals that they have for themselves because they are seeking it in an outward form. You see, if you are aware of your hunger, if you are aware of your nakedness, if you are aware of your lack of comforts from the human point of view, then you are not aware of your inner realization of who you are. Now, I ask each of you to take time every day for spiritual illumination, for meditation, for intuition, illumination. What am I trying to think here?
Introspection.
Thank you. I ask each one of you to go into the motion of introspection. And I'm not going to ask you to tell me, but how many of you take the time specifically to become quiet and listen within, just walk or do nothing and just sit back and say, all right, I'm listening now. And then be very quiet and listen, just in a sensitive attitude, just listen. Think nothing, say nothing, do nothing, anticipate nothing. Because if you anticipate something, you already are telling the divine in you how it's to come through. Now, and when you have an inspiration, you don't know what that inspiration is going to be. You have no idea. Now, for instance, if you were to give an extemporaneous talk, the word extemporaneous means unplanned. You just take a topic and you talk on it. Now, basically, you haven't got the biggest idea of what you're going to talk about. You're going to talk about Tiger Woods, a golfer, a young man born in 1975. He was the most famous golfer alive, and perhaps the youngest today. Now, what do you know about Tiger Woods? What is there about Tiger Woods you're going to talk about? Well, if you will listen within, you'll get all the answers you could ask for. If you listen within, the divine in you will speak to you and tell you exactly what it is that you want to talk about. Now, from the little we've heard about Tiger Woods, would we say that he is a person of deep dedication? Would we say that he is a person who likes himself? Mm-hmm. Would we say he's a person who enjoys what he does? Mm-hmm. Would we say he's a person who loves his parents?
Yes.
Would you say he is a person who loves his brothers and sisters, if he has any? Mm-hmm. Would you say, and this is a very important thing, would you say he is a very respectful and mannerly person? Right. I've never met him, but I would say he would have to be respectful and mannerly to do his golf the way he does it. Now, when he addresses the ball, when he thinks about golfing, what does he do? He thinks in a one-pointed way. He listens intuitively into himself. Now, he walks the course before he plays it. He is aware of the lay of the course. We spoke of this the other day. He's aware of that. And you must know that. But when it comes time to play golf, play ball, he gets out there with his club, and perhaps they move the green because the other green was divoted too much, and they moved it over about 10 feet. And so now he's 10 feet off of where he was when he first visualized this thing. Is he bound by his first visualization? Or does he play each lie where he is? That means where the ball lands. Does he do that right where he is? Yes, he does. Now, you don't know anything about golf, and you're very foolish to say you don't know anything about golf, but you have no pre-knowledge of the game. So, you know there are clubs, and you know there are many clubs. There are wooden clubs that you use for specific type of locations, the driver one for the driving tee, and you have irons, 1 through 9, basically. And sometimes there's a 6.5 or an 8.5, because it's very special. And then you have a putter. And sometimes you have several putters. And you use a putter that you feel is going to give you the right flow and swing for the location you have. Okay, so personally, I have played golf on many golf courses, and I have, in the early days when I was a teenager and maintaining golf courses, I would have one club, the 7-iron, and I would play the entire course on the 7-iron, and I'd birdie the course, because I knew just how to tilt that club to give me the exact drive that I wanted for it. Oh, it was a little energetic activity, but just... for a young person who feels just wonderful, there was no problem. Now, the people I played with, they were always amazed that my ball went where I wanted it to go. And they were always saying, yeah, yeah. And I said to them, are you my friends? They said, yeah. And I said, well, then your ball goes exactly where you want it to go, too. Now, where do you want your ball to go? And then they told me where they wanted their ball to go. I said, okay, now watch it. It'll go right there. And they hit it, and it went right there. I mean, we were all learning together. Because I didn't know that I was following some noble practice of one-pointedness, you know. But I was, because I listened within. I did not go to golfing school. I had never read a book on golf. All I knew is I caddied for people, and I saw what they did, and usually what they did wrong, and how they did not report the scores that they were supposed to report because they didn't want to feel so badly. And so when we played golf, if in the beginning, we didn't count the score at all because we didn't want to feel bad about it. We felt we'd have astronomical numbers, but we didn't. And we realized after the first couple games, hey, we're pretty good. We're pretty good. We have learned to listen within and follow what it says. Well, you can be sure that Mr. Tiger Woods is doing that very same thing. He's listening and being spiritually illumined to what the divine in him says to do. Now, what has this got to do with absolute? Well, in absolute, there is no is, okay? In absolute, all is the archetypal, if you will, or the concept, or whatever we end up saying. We'll have end up saying a lot of things. But whatever we do, it will be a done deal, right? Absolute is a done deal. There's nothing to do and nothing to be done. There's no awakening. There's no sleeping. It is just there, okay? So this is what we did with our golf. Our golf was a done deal. You can be sure this is what Tiger Woods does. He looks at his ball, he looks at his clubs, he looks at whatever he's doing, and it's a done deal. He goes there. It's like winning at craps all the time, winning at roulette all the time. It would be kind of uninteresting after a while, because you play it with such skill. Now, let's look at another profession, a diamond cutter. A diamond cutter takes this very precious stone. It's worth a great deal. And he cuts it, he facets that stone. And if he makes a mistake in faceting the stone, he's just blown a lot of work, plus he has blown a beautiful stone. So he has to be very careful what he does. And he has to do it day after day after day, because he's a gem cutter. Day after day, and he has to recognize what values are. Day after day, he is doing it continuously. Does he think that he is an illumined gem cutter? No. Does he think that he's very good? He thinks he's competent. But does he think that he is the ultimate? And actually, he does. Because when he cuts his diamonds, he does not stop and think about it. He just follows that inner guidance that says, put your chisel here and put your mallet here and do it just like this. Michelangelo was another one like that. He took this stone that was discarded by the other masons, the other artists, and he took that piece of marble and it was faulted. And what did he find in there? Remember?
David.
He found David in there. One of the most magnificent pieces of sculpture that we have on hand. I'm sure other more magnificent pieces of sculpture had come along before those days, but in the trembling of Rome and earthquakes and other things that came along, a lot of them were lost. Some of them were found in the Mediterranean and brought up, but a lot of them were lost, which is of no great thing. But the genius will always out. And Tiger Woods winning 4 national championships in one season is certainly a remarkable thing. Now, did he win it because he did not believe in himself?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, did he win it because he wished to win it? He didn't even care whether he won it. He won it because he gave his very best, and his best was a little bit better than somebody else's. And it was not a matter that he was in competition. It's not a matter that he was trying to win it and take it home. It's just a matter that he did his best. Now, you say we're making a noble icon out of Tiger Woods. He did that himself. He did that himself. We merely have him as an example of magnificence. Now, are you ready for your illumination? Are you ready for your spiritual illumination? Are you ready for your awareness, even just to have a glimpse of your absolute nature? And you say, wow, wow. Yeah, well, you can't have it. Because, you see, the difficulty is, the moment that you cross over that line of being exquisite into being absolute, you won't know it. You can't. Because absolute transcends anything. We say, well, this is why I imagine this is why the Hebrews said, you cannot see God and live. not a matter, you cannot live. You disappear. You enter into that oneness, allness, that transcends any isness or any other activity. Yeah, we're quite beautiful people. We're quite remarkable people. And we can enter into this spiritual illumination, which is an experience of absolute, but it's not absolute. It's just an experience toward it. It's like the father watching the television while the kids are running around the house. He doesn't see them. That's a trance type of activity. And you, when you enter into your spiritual quietness, every day you're given a specific time for your introspection. And I know what you do, because I'm with you. I'm with you while you're playing your games. And I'm thinking to myself, well, I guess that's that. But I let you be. I could be like the Hindu teachers and cluck you on the head with a stone and say, come on, wake up now. Come on, pay attention. Pay attention, concentrate. But you have to do it yourself. You have to do it yourself. It's a bit frustrating because you do appear to be wanting it so much, but then you don't do it. And what's the first thing you forget? First thing you forget is when your emotions get shook. First thing you forget is when there's some distraction. And the distraction can be anything, an airplane overhead, a helicopter. So if there were a dozen cowboys and Indians running across the property, and you, our master, you could sit in meditation and be untouched. Why is it the gurus in India train themselves to sit in the middle of the road with traffic going by on both sides, totally untouched? Not totally untouched, because they're untouched. When they are totally untouched, they don't sit there anymore. When they have gained that awareness that they are untouched, they don't stay there. Now, why don't they stay there when they have gained that awareness that they're untouched? Because they don't need to put on a show. They're not putting on a show in the first place. They're putting on a distraction illustration for them to see if they really are untouched by the movement of the traffic going by. And when they are, then they go into their own experiences, whatever it may be. They go into their little hermitage. They go into their little hermit hut. They go into their quiet place, into their temple, their inner sanctuary. And when they do that, then they are very close. But you see, when they enter into absolute, which is a great experience to enter into, they are no more. Like we said in Jonathan Livingston Seagull, he went off into that greater realm, and then he says, Sully, I have to go back, because there are people there who wouldn't have learned, just as I wouldn't have learned, if, you know, Chang were not here to teach me. And we have this inner compassion, and so long as we have the inner compassion that we have to teach anyone or share with anyone or help somebody, then we're not there. And you say, well, Herb, what about you? Are you there? Well, that's a game that you can play. Are you there? And let me say to you, and I'm saying this in all humility, if you see me and you see yourself there, if you see yourself there and you see me, then I'm there. Now, do you see yourself there yet? And be careful, because you may very well see yourself there. But you see, in absolute, you're not touched by anything. You're not any diversion whatsoever. You're just living in that perfect, peaceful awareness of allness without space or time, and really without space or time. Your relative world seems to have space and time, but it really doesn't. But we think it does. Like they were saying about people under hypnosis, they're told that this black and white picture is a color picture. And so the people, in their brainwaves, read it as seeing it as a color picture. And then they're told that a herd of elephants is jumping by out in front of the house, shong, shong, hooting and hollering, you know, clump, 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 and all the kids are watching and what have you. And you can hear it, even though it's quiet as can be out in front. Not one moving sound. You see, when you go into that consciousness, you go into that daydreaming, you go into that awareness of something greater than you're aware of right now, you just take any illusion that you're told and experience it. And then when you are alerted to the fact that it's not so, it doesn't bother you. You say, oh, I could have sworn I heard it. You know? Mother, she hears that her son is in trouble in the service. And so she mentally sits down and she says, son, I surround you with my pure white light of love. All your ways are peace and all your paths are pleasantness. Son, whatever you are doing, wherever you are, it is all in divine order right now. Son, I love you, I love you, you know? And she just thinks love. She doesn't think of what the problem may be. She doesn't think of whatever type of thing war might bring. She only thinks her son is surrounded by the pure white light of love. So she knows that apparently there's a need for her awareness of that. And so she's aware of it. Then the son comes home and says, my goodness, I had a tough day there, you know. And she says, well, what happened? He said, well, there was a tanker nearby and it was blowing up and it was spewing out all over everywhere. And we were supposed to go and with our fire equipment and put it out. And we almost got burned ourselves. But I had duty on the opposite side of the ship. And so I didn't even feel the heat of the fire. I was totally immune to it all. But the other guys, they had to be close to the fire to put it out. And she doesn't say, son, I prayed for you and I knew that you were surrounded by my pure white light. She knew it. She didn't have to get credit from him for having it that way. A confirmation came, but even that wasn't important. Because when she surrounded him with her pure white light of love, it was so. Now, that's an illumination. That's an inspiration. That's intuitive. And the more you stay in your intuitive nature, the more you stay in your awareness of your divine self, in your introspective self, the more wonderful this experience is. And the more wonderful the experience is that you are clicking into in your spiritual illumination. So, my friends, I love you, and I see you're all aware of the spiritual illumination and experience in absolute right now, and you're enjoying it just like I am. I love you. I love you. I love you.